Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only. Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
We are a weekly podcast, Soul of a Gamer.
Hey, I'm smart this time. Well, I did not, this
let's
time.
Let's not go that far, okay?
I will fuck it up again.
I love pressing that button. That was my favorite button.
This game gets really fucking weird.
Yeah, so you do acid and then you go into the hamster shit.
And this week is
Night Trap.
Night Trap.
They're right behind you, Night Trap.
10-year-old birthday party. Next scene, kill the kid.
You got to kill the kid. Sha la 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 la, car is coming. Throw your body into the car and die. All I could do every time I was playing Ethan was just would start walking around and go, Jason!
Oh, God.
One. And here we go!
Yet again, here we are. Hope you guys liked our new little theme song that I put in there. I haven't actually done it yet, but I mean, I assume I'm going to do it, so I hope I do that. And if I don't, I'm so sorry, guys, for giving you so much hope.
Yeah, seriously, though. It is pretty good. I'm enjoying our little intro. I hope you guys enjoy it, too.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun using. We are Soul of a Gamer. I'm Scott.
Yes, I'm Steven.
And every week we play a game. We give you an in-depth study of how the game was made, and we give you our review and thoughts on the game.
Yes, and we are a variety game podcast, so we do all games from all consoles across all platforms and time.
Yeah, you know, one thing that people have told me before is like, it's weird that you guys do old games for reviews and not like brand new ones that just came out. And I'm like, well, you know, there are games out there like this one I had never even considered playing before, or the one we're playing next week, which I doubt a lot of people even fucking played, where someone might talk about it and it might inspire you to play it. It's just like an old movie. Someone might talk about that old movie and now you want to watch it and you're like, I've never even heard of that before.
Like, I've been in a huge influx, especially like movies and games, of just trying like a lot of older stuff, because I mean, even today's times, everyone's complaining, oh, games aren't finished when they come out, games aren't this when they come out, games are all just about microtransactions and all this and stuff now. It's like, okay, but there's still 20,000 games you've never even heard of you have access to.
All and over a lot of these games, you say 20,000, I'm saying like 6 billion.
Oh, it's way more. But there's like 20, there's like, I think the, somewhere around like 40,000 games a year come out or something
probably. Yeah. I would have no doubts about that.
I can't remember exactly.
That's not even counting all like the shitty like iPhone games.
That's like double A and triple A games only. Not considering all the single developers.
Yep.
Just shit like free games on Steam,
or someone like releases a GitHub game that you have to play on GitHub or something.
Yeah,
I created a game, guys. It's a bunch of snakes that eat a bunch of mice, and that's what it does, and that's what you do, and this is the game called Snake Mouse.
Snake Mouse. Well, I've got a game where penises attack other penises by stabbing their taints.
Okay, so penis taint mouth?
I've actually played that game.
Is that a real game?
There's like this like weird like party computer game that has like a bunch of like really like sexual things, and there's like this one of the mini games in it is you are just like penises with like balls, and you almost have like an asshole like at the back of
the
it
fuck?
And you have to try to penetrate each other.
Okay.
And you like move the tip of the penis around. It's the grossest and weirdest thing ever. I played it at some random friend of a friend's house one time.
He's not my friend, don't worry.
No, it's one of Corey's friends.
Yeah, of course it is.
Well, I think it was one of John's friends, like Dwayne, old friend John. Yeah.
All right, well.
Yeah, I was like, that was weird.
Well, yeah, why don't we jump right into this with what we're playing this week?
Yeah. So as I was saying last week, I was playing through the Shadow of the Erdtree DLC and replaying through Elden Ring, and I have come to say that I have finally completed it. I have completed this game through and through. I have beat every single boss in the main game and in the DLC, all over 200 of them. It was like 166 in the main game and like an extra 66 or 69 in the DLC. Like, it's ridiculous.
Nice.
Way too much time invested into this series, and my god, the DLC was just incredible in every way. It's way worth the money. It's the most expensive DLC I've ever purchased. I think it was $40, but
god damn,
it's another, I probably want to say I'd spend another like 40 hours just in the DLC alone.
Yeah.
So, and it's, I mean, worth the money.
You like, think about other games' DLCs, what was it called, shit, why am I, High on Life? When I High on Life and I played their DLC, that was like $13 to buy their DLC, which isn't outrageous, but the DLC is really only like 2.5 hours long.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer, yeah.
So it's like, it's, and you know, that's just going from point A to point Z, I guess you could say. That's just completing the game without doing any of the extra stuff. But still, like, you know, that's, it's not a lot of money, but it's not, that's, some people's games, like the entirety of their games, cost that much or less. So, yeah,
well, and this one, not only did it add just a shit ton more content, like, of, like, area and space-wise in the game, because the DLC map is the same size as the starting map of the base game. Like,
that's
the starting
crazy
area that you're allowed to access. So it's huge.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like I said, it has a shit ton of bosses in the game. And then it also added an extra 100 weapons, an extra, like, 66 talismans and a bunch of extra new spells, a bunch of new armor sets, all this other shit. So, like, the amount of content you get for $40, well worth it. Like,
nice.
A lot of, like, these, like Sin with Sacrifice and stuff like that, when those games are, like, $40 coming out of the gate and it's 6 hours of content, like, I don't think that's as worth it. When you're paying $40 for 40, at least 40 hours of content, yeah, like, it's way worth it. Like,
well, then,
not even a contest.
It's a hard, we've talked about this before, just individually, where it's a hard thing to measure, like, how much is price worth the hours played?
Yes.
And a lot of the times, I'll always side on the side that I wish games were affordable for the amount of hours played, but if every hour you got you really enjoyed, isn't the price worth it?
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, I think of it as, like, even, like, going out to, like, dinner or something, like, something like that, or going out to the movies or something like that, like, 3 hours of content, and if you and your spouse go and you get popcorn and stuff, it's going to be like $50-$60.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get 3 hours of extremely good content for $60, that still could be worth it.
True. All right, well, so, I'm not playing anything this week. I'm focused more on the game we're doing next week, so... So
that's
I will reveal what I'm playing at the end of the episode when we talk about what we're going to be playing next week.
All right.
But I will get back into Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories as soon as I'm done with that.
Yeah, the other game I still messed around with here and there is Bloons Tower Defense 6. Oh, they added it on Xbox. So I have it on Xbox now, and I'm trying to get all the achievements on Xbox. But I was so bummed. You can't actually use your old phone account and transport it to Xbox. It's two separate entities entirely. So
that's,
I have
weird,
to start the entire game over. And I already have like 6 years of progress in
of
the
course
game on phone and tablet.
That's
like,
usually how it goes.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Now that we're done talking about that, this week we are playing Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Yes.
This is a... I don't, what kind of game would you call this? A, like, action?
This is a hack and slash action game.
Yeah, hack and slash action. A little bit of adventure in there. The maps are kind of big for a hack and slash, but...
Yeah, but I mean, it's very along the lines of Devil May Cry or Bayonetta or any of those styles.
For
it's
sure.
Very linear. It's just straight through. It's just mainly combat. It's a platinum game, so most platinum games are very combat heavy.
Yep, yep. So let's just start this off with a little breakdown of the synopsis. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance takes place a few years after Metal Gear Solid 4. It follows the story of Raiden as he works his way to take down a global cabal of warmongering politicians and just general bad people. He cuts through his enemies and finds an atrocity that he just can't bear to see. So,
yes, he does.
So yeah. The first time that Metal Gear Rising is mentioned and worked on is immediately after the release of Metal Gear Solid 4, which I think was in 2005 or 6.
I can't remember exactly.
Yeah. Somewhere in there. It might have been as late as 7, but not past 7. Hideo Kojima, the director of all previous Metal Gear Solid games, wanted to work on Metal Gear Solid 5 immediately after the release of 4. But he also wanted to give the team who worked on Metal Gear Solid 4 time off. So he let the team go on vacation and gave his idea of Game 5 to a younger group of programmers and writers. They were really struggling to come up with an idea for 5, and eventually someone dropped the idea of doing a spin-off game instead. Kojima knew that there were a lot of evolution. There was a lot of evolution. Yeah. Kojima knew that there was a lot of evolution of Raiden from Metal Gear Solid 2 to 4 and really wanted to show people how he had grown into his own person. It is not known if Kojima suggested that the spinoff game be about Raiden, but he was very excited about the idea of having it that way. The younger team was also excited because working on Metal Gear Solid 5 would be a huge undertaking and it would be much easier to do a shorter game. Which, yeah, that's crazy to ask like brand new programmers to come out and make the next big hit in your fucking giant series of games.
Especially if you've seen Metal Gear Solid 5, you're like, yeah, that he went big for that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't even... Did Kojima... I know that he got fired. I just don't know when.
Well, he didn't... I don't know if he really got fired or more along the line as he just left. Like, he didn't want to keep... doing what he was doing with Konami.
Yeah, I don't know either way. I've always heard fired, but it could be split.
Yeah,
maybe.
I can't remember. I don't remember exactly. I know there was like a lot of like information going around about it, and I try not to just like jump on the first headlines I see.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was definitely a weird thing, and I know like he I think went on to do Death Stranding and stuff afterwards solo, and he was working on a couple other projects. And
yeah. He's a great fucking director, now, dude. He's an awesome writer. He's got some great ideas in that brain of his. I wish like that would be focused on games that we want to see come out.
Well, I'm stupid excited. We don't have very much information for this yet, but there's a game coming out. I think it's called like OI or something like that. And he's doing it with Jordan Peele.
Oh, that's crazy. Nice.
Yes.
That's cool. Jordan Peele's a great fucking writer, too.
Along the same lines as Silent Hill. Is like the only thing that we've gotten from it so far, but okay. He's working with Jordan Peele. I'm like, you put two powerhouse directors from two different medias into the same room to work on a project together. Sign me up. Right? Like, that sounds so fantastic.
And Jordan Peele's kind of like on the edge of horror at any given time in his life. He's not quite there, but he is on the edge.
He is. He's got 3 horror movies out.
Well, like, I don't know. They're not very scary to me whenever I watch them. I think he is like your lighter.
I feel like you always feel like horror has to be like deathly afraid scary for
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Demonic ghost. Well,
exactly.
Horror is a very wide.
But he's like a lighter.
He's a lighter
horror. He's not like the crazy like this guy's gonna die in 2 seconds.
He does more grounded horror movies.
Yeah, yeah. Which is fine.
Except for maybe Us. I wouldn't say Us is grounded.
Yeah. All right, well, back on this. This way the team would gain some experience without being stressed all throughout the game making process. Kojima decided since this was a game outside of the story of the numbered games that he would take a step back and leave the creative creating process to the younger team. He would just be executive producer on the game and not the director. This eliminated a lot of stress for the team as well because now they would have a lot of freedom in making the game. Early work on the game was very slow. The team had a lot of problems in coming up with a proper balance to the game. The idea of Raiden... was different than in previous games. In previous games, stealth played a very important role. In Rising, Raiden was not the same kind of character. He was a very strong cyborg who could easily cut his way through many of the enemies instead of sneaking past or silently killing them. The team really struggled to balance the stealth action and ability to cut everything. That was just one idea the team could not give up on. The ability to cut everything was a cool concept. in the game, and the team was really struggling in balancing that bit of the gameplay a lot, like a lot. That was the one thing that kept coming up in all the research, is like how hard it is to balance your ability to cut everything, because if you can do that, how can you have a boss if you can just cut them?
Yeah, if you just rip them in half.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I can see that. Like, and that's a cool concept. I would have loved if the entire map was open, kind of like Prototype, and you had this sword that could just cut through a fucking building.
That's true.
That would be fucking sweet. But then you would feel way, like, almost, that's a game where you're God and you can't be beat.
Yeah, right. Basically, you have to be fighting against other gods.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the hard part, and that balance is almost impossible to make. Sorry, I lost my spot. The ability to cut everything was a cool concept in the game. Yep, we talked about that. The story was also an issue where the team felt like the story and the gameplay were at odds with each other instead of flowing side by side. Many of the programmers felt like the game was fun but didn't have much direction. This led to Kojima taking back the role of director and trying to stop the team from fighting one another. He started to give out timelines for when he wanted things to be done. The lead programmer had to be...
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a two-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Bargain with Kojima just to have the game not be canceled. He told Kojima that he felt the game had fun elements and could work with more direction. Kojima did feel like the team did not have a strong enough director to get the game in order. At the end of 2012, after Kojima had several projects he was working on finish, he peeked in on the team again to see how the process was going with his suggestions. He found that the team was creating, destroying, recreating elements of the game just to try and balance it. So they would like do something, say, no, that's not working, and then redo it to see if it works a different way. And they would do this over and over again in an endless cycle. Keep in mind, guys, this game probably started in development in 2007. Yeah. And by 2010, they hadn't even got it down.
Wow,
there was crazy. Almost like they had the trailer release for the game where you can see like all this cool cutting stuff and things at the E3 and like all that stuff. And they hadn't even gotten past that point. There's no story. Oh, there's no nothing. Yeah, it's insane. This led to more delays, did not solve the balancing of the cut anything mentality the team had. At the end of 2010, with the team still not able to stay on the timeline, Kojima decided to cancel the game. It's canceled. It's gone. It's not existent anymore. He still wanted to keep the concept of the game alive and started looking for other studios to take on the project. He considered overseas studios but felt that the best people to work on a Katana-focused game would be Japanese studio. Right?
Fair.
He said, like, the ninja, the fact that you're a ninja and you're wielding a katana, it should be a Japanese studio that focused on it.
Q&A Konami.
Yeah. Not Konami. Konami actually owns Kojima Productions.
That's right.
Kojima saw the president and CEO of Platinum Games, Tatsuya Minami, at a party and casually asked him what he thought of taking on the project. Minami thought it was a joke, but quickly saw the stern look in Kojima and knew he was serious. Without much thought, Minami agreed to take on the project and started working on ideas within a week, and within a week had several. Kojima actually did not expect Platinum Games to take on the project and was surprised to see how into it they were within the first week, which is crazy. Like, one of them felt like, you're crazy to ask me to do this. And the other guy's like, you're crazy to accept me asking you to do this. Like, it's literally insane. It's so funny how the Japanese hide their emotions so well.
And one team's like, we've been spending 3 years. We don't have a single idea. And so the company's like, give me a week.
Yeah, well, and it's like, they worked on a bunch of different kinds of games than, which is the thing. Like, having someone who does more hack and slash style games, those people are going to know how to fuck with katanas. That's going to be their whole thing.
Platinum Games, they do combat so well.
They do. They honestly do. And I can't remember. I mentioned it earlier on to you. I thought I saw something where they had built an entire game engine to support the game and then ended up not using it. That could be a different game I'm thinking of, but I thought I read that somewhere. I didn't put it in my notes, so I'm not super confident on that. So guys, don't take that as like he's saying something that's not true, because I'm not 100% confident. I just thought I remembered reading that.
Nope. Drill his ass. You said it was a fact.
It's a fact.
He said that he would give $1 million to every person.
Should I go on the, they're eating dogs in Ohio. Steven, are they eating dogs where you were at? Are they eating the fucking
mine's
pets?
Fine.
Okay, that's
mine's
good.
Right there. I'm not near Springfield, so I guess okay. I'm okay.
I guess. Sorry, guys. I had to get a little political there, and it's just a funny thing to say.
So great.
So yeah,
it's been
so
a huge joke in Ohio.
Yeah, in the first week they did get a lot done, which is cool. I really like that about them. Platinum Games seemed like a really cool studio for that stuff. They're very quick to turn around ideas and get things like the wheels rolling, you know. Yeah. It only took a few months for Platinum Games to have an alpha of the game, implementing their ideas and having them work much better than the ones Kojima's young team had worked on.
Fair.
So within a few months, they already had a fucking alpha out. But to be fair, Kojima Productions did have an. Well, Kojima's Productions did have an alpha out already. That was the trial game on Xbox 360.
Oh, okay.
So I believe, because this is in 2010 when they started working on this, and I think the game came out in 2013. But I remember like reading a bunch about Kojima going up and like talking about it with a bunch of people and them saying like, so when's the game coming out? And he's like, oh, I can't give you that information. And it turned out like he had no idea because they were taking so long to get it done.
Yeah.
So
well, I think Platinum Games has a little bit more money, and it has definitely like probably a bigger team.
Yeah, for sure. Kojima Productions did really like the team at Platinum Games and worked well with them. In the beginning, it was hard because the original idea of the game was to have it based between Metal Gear Solid 2 and 4. Mm-hmm. This was fine for Kojima Productions because they knew how this time period worked and had it already written out for the other games. With Platinum Games, however, they wanted more freedom and did not want the beginning and the ending of the game written for them.
Because
you know, like if you do it in between 2 as like an in-between game, then you know how 2 ended and you know how 4 begins, you know? Like,
yeah.
And I don't, guys, just so you know, I've never played a Metal Gear Solid game. I don't know how any of them go. So I assume there's some big stuff.
A little bit of 5.
So, yeah. I do want to play because I've heard the stories are amazing.
We do have a couple on our list at some point.
So. Yeah. They asked for the game to be based years after Metal Gear Solid 4. At first, Kojima did not like the idea of changing his timeline, but eventually relented as Platinum Games had the right to make something that they would be proud of. A lot of the reason Kojima changed his mind on letting Platinum Games have more creative control over the game was because he really liked the idea of Platinum Games had. After taking full control over, Platinum Games started to make several changes. In previous Metal Gear Solid games, the teams would do a lot of work on performance and realistic camera work. For this game, Platinum Games worked more on visuals for the game. They also limited the cut-anything mentality to do it only during a special mode the character could go into while they had enough energy to do so. This way, the element was there, but not too powerful. Kojima said that the game was the game being about Raiden was a big risk, but something he really wanted to do. Originally, in Metal Gear Solid 2, players did not like the character of Raiden. But growth of the character between Metal Gear Solid 2 and 4 made him a much more likable character, and people were actually asking for Raiden to have his own game.
Yeah, I know that was a weird thing because like right after the first one came out, which was pretty popular, you switched the main character in the game for the second one and no one was expecting that.
Yeah, and they fucking... And is Raiden the main character in the second one? I don't know.
Character in the second one.
So the second one was great, I hear, but then everyone fucking hated him because he was like a crybaby or something.
Well, yeah, and it just wasn't the same thing and everyone was expecting to play a Solid Snake, and so when you weren't playing a Solid Snake and you're playing as this like whinier kid, then everyone's like what are we doing.
And I know that so Raiden wasn't a cyborg yet, because I think that happens in 4 or maybe in between 3 and 4.
I don't know the timeline of
during an interview that I was listening to, he was talking about how a lot of Japanese games like to make really feminine lead characters. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a selling point. So the more feminine your male character is in a Japanese game, the more sales those people tend to have, because people really relate with the character a little bit more. So when he made Solid Snake, he's like, I don't want to make that. That's stupid. I want to make someone who's like a little bit more manly, a little bit like less feminine. I want to make him like someone where the males can really relate to. And then when they changed to Raiden in the second game, which now it makes sense as I was watching that interview, I'm like, why the fuck would it matter what a secondary character does? But if he's the main character, he was more feminist in the second game. He less had a hardcore style to him. And I think that's why people really didn't like Raiden, because Solid Snake was this manly man, and then Raiden's this like effeminate whiny baby.
Yeah. And like we said, we're saying this with a grain of salt because we haven't actually played
through
these games.
Yeah, these are just per interviews that
we are wrong. This is from things we've heard or things we've seen from other people playing or talking about it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's crazy. And like the whole animation styles and stuff like that, like I've been seeing a lot lately, like a lot of Japanese studios, especially for anime and some of their games and stuff, they actually make the eyes super big, like cat eyes.
Yeah,
because people are really drawn to that, and so that's why a lot of people have those like big like whoa eyes in all animes and a lot of Japanese production stuff.
It's cool. Casting for the game, I didn't get a lot of information on casting. I'm kind of upset about that because I didn't like the voices in the game at all, but I wanted to see they were okay. They're nothing special for sure, but I'd love to see like interviews with the cast, but the cast didn't really do any interviews about the game. So, and this is just the English version of the game, guys. I'm not going to even bother with the Japanese because we didn't play it. Casting for the game was Quentin Flynn as Raiden, Philip Anthony Rodriguez as Samuel Rodriguez, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah.
Michael Beatty as Blade Wolf, J.B. Blanc as Boris. They had his full name. I'm not going to fucking... I didn't even write it down. I wasn't even going to try. His last name is fucking ridiculous.
That's fair.
Phil Lamar as Kevin Washington, Kerry Walgren as Courtney Collins, Jim Ward as Doctor, Sally Safiotti as Mistral, John Kassir as Monsoon, Crispin Freeman as Sundowner, Alistair Duncan as Stephen Armstrong, Sean Christian as George, Dorian Harwood as Namani, Travis Willingham as Dolzaev, and Christina, Puchesley as Sonny Emmerich. Puchesley? I don't know. These people have some weird fucking names. Music plays an integral part of the game as well. The game actually has its own soundtrack that is favorable in reviews. The composer of the game is Jamie Christopherson. This was Jamie's first game where he had to compose an entire album worth of music. Because if you guys don't know, there's like an album's worth of music. Like each boss fight has its own song associated with it, which is fucking sweet. Like this game actually had some cool music.
Yeah, it does.
This game also features the guitarist for Machine Head, Logan Mader, electronic DJ, Ferry Corsten, Voodoo Highway singer, I don't know how to say this first name. G-R-A-E-M-E. Graeme? Graham? Spelled really fucking weird. So that Cornies is his name. And Jason Charles Miller and Remixers Maniac Agenda.
Okay. And one of those names actually caught my attention when you were reading through the cast list. Phil Lamar, he's Samurai Jack. And he's also Hermes.
Is he?
Futurama, yeah.
Nice.
He's a really big voice actor. He's also in like Pulp Fiction and a bunch of other movies. He's a huge actor. So Phil Lamar is a definite, like as soon as you said that name, I was like, oh shit.
Reviews of the game were okay. You know, generally within like the 70% range.
Yeah.
Most people like it. Most people say it's not replayable. And most people don't like the fact that the parry doesn't have its own dedicated button.
That's fair.
So, and those were kind of which is funny because I thought the same thing while playing with the parry. And the game was released on February 19th,
2013. There we go. Thanks for that update. I guess we'll get right into our first segment after that, the best and the worst. And get right into, the combat's very interesting. I love the combos and the special moves. I think the combat is very, it's so unique, especially with that blade mode and stuff like that in there. And using the, what is that called? Like the Nagasaki, where you like rip out someone's spine.
Yeah.
or whatever that was called.
I can't remember exactly. Doku.
There's
or something.
So many like weird and cool inventive things in this, and I really liked how much like kind of freedom you had with these attacks. And I wish there was a little bit more combos. And the one thing I do wish with the combos is like it would like when you purchase them, it would tell you what buttons.
Yeah.
Like, cause you actually had to go to the help menu.
Yeah, you had to go to the help menu to find them. Which is really confusing too, because it doesn't have like a combo list as its own little designated area. You click.
That's usually
help.
A thing on the menu, like combo list, or like when now, you go to controls, you'll see combos.
Yeah.
Or something.
To be fair, when I pressed start and I didn't see combo list, but I saw help, I'm like, I'm sure it's there. So
yeah, that's I did the same thing.
Yeah, so it's not like it. We're both jaded about that, but you know, it's just weird not to have it under its own dedicated combo list.
Well, yeah, and most of the time, like in most games, where I see when you buy a combo, it. Like it'll tell you the move the moveset of how to trigger it yourself. So it was weird that I didn't give you like any information about how to use combos or what the combos were, and there was no like training in the tutorial even for combos.
I mean, one thing I really liked about this game was actually that little bit of RPG element in here where you can upgrade your weapons, you can upgrade your combos, you can buy new weapons. Like that's actually an interesting way to do this game, is just to have all these different availabilities with the RPG thing. Like, and that's really cool, and I've always said this, I love it when games do like a micro RPG action in there.
Yep, pseudo RPGs are definitely the way to go, I feel like, for a lot of things. And it is really interesting, because like with the upgrading list, your weapon and stuff, it's not just like upgrading your weapon, just paying for one upgrade. You can upgrade the damage it does, you can upgrade the amount of damage it can absorb, you can upgrade the amount of energy you produce with it. You can, it's got like all these different things, and it's very unique and very different style, but it's definitely fun. And the
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot, and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous US only.
More points you get, the more you can upgrade. So
the way you get more points is to either replay the levels or to do really fucking well and get S class in all your fights.
Yes.
Which is really hard.
Yeah, you have to get no hit, right? Basically,
it's no hit. Your combos have to be at a certain point. You have to use like the slicing thing, the bullet time thing they have in there, at least like a few times, and kill a few enemies like that. Like when you look at the breakdown of how they do it, it's a lot of things stacking on top of each other that don't really have anything to do with each other.
Yes.
One thing,
a little weird there.
One thing I already said I didn't like about this game, there's no dedicated parry button. Your parry button's the same as your light attack button, which I don't like. I think that's kind of dumb.
Because this wasn't built like for like a lesser system or something. This was built for Xbox 360, PS3 at the time.
Yeah.
So the fact that this doesn't use the entirety of the controller is a little odd. Especially when you have extra buttons you can use, because not every button's used in this game.
Yeah, I don't even remember what B was used for.
I don't think I remember.
I don't
either.
Think there was anything.
Just like A to pick up. Was B the action button to like press elevators and stuff?
Yeah, so that would have been perfect as a parry.
Yeah,
you don't use it during fights. Then that's perfect. That's fucking perfect.
Or even using the bumper for that.
Yeah,
like you could use a
one of the bumpers was for sub weapon, and another bumper was for something else.
That's true.
For locking, I think locking on target. Yeah. But B would have been perfect. But yeah, just not having a dedicated parry button, it does make it a little hard. It's not impossible, but it's a little hard.
Yeah, but you're like going for a combo, and then you'll just like block, and you're like, I wanted to attack right there.
Yeah, and one thing that I didn't like about this too is So they decided not to do a combat dodge. Instead, they did it like 100% parries. All of your blocking should be through parry and not through dodging.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I thought that was a little annoying, especially for certain enemies that can't be parried. It would be really nice to have a dodge for those enemies that can't be parried.
I agree with that, and I was kind of feeling that way a lot of the time. Because there's even like segments where you're just like, especially against, Typhoon or whatever his name was?
Monsoon.
Monsoon, where he's like throwing that giant wheel at you, there's nothing you can do to that giant wheel. You literally just have to dodge it and you're just run away from back it. And forth. And that's kind of annoying. Like, I wish I had like a more of like an action role for it.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with that. Things I really did like about this game, the sword play is fucking fantastic.
Yes,
it is so much fun to fucking play with that sword and just cut shit. Cutting shit in half, like doing all the blade mode, it's really cool. Like, it is a cool style of gaming, and it really makes me miss the fact, like we were talking about earlier, to do more of a prototype game where you have such an open world and you can cut fucking anything in it. I kind of wanted that. As soon as I started playing the game, I'm like, man, it would be cool if I could cut this building in fucking half.
Well, and it's so cool. We're kind of describing blade mode, but for those who haven't played the game, it's basically, it slows down time, or basically
it's
like, stops
bullet
time.
Mode.
It's bullet mode basically, and you can move your both thumbsticks around. One does the camera, and one shows where your blade's going to swipe. And you can swipe however you want. You can even use the thumbstick to swipe and just go crazy with it. But you can dice up these things into hundreds of pieces, and it keeps track of how many pieces you cut things up into. So it's really fun to just like, oh, I cut that guy into 100 pieces. Or you'll just do a quick slice and cut him in half, and it's fun just even watching them just like bleh.
They have a cool ninja mode in this too, where basically you run as a ninja and it does all of your stuff for you, which I do appreciate a lot. I don't like, you know, I already don't like QTEs, quick time events at all. QTEs are shit. And this game did have a good amount of QTEs. And the last thing we needed also was dodging QTEs.
Yes. Another thing we kind of talked about it a little bit, but the soundtrack is amazing, especially during those boss fights.
Oh my god, the music slaps so hard, it revs up so quickly, guys. It is so cool.
Like the entire time, I'm just like, yes, it gets you hype. I don't know what it is about it, but I got like pumped up every boss fight. The other thing that's something that I want to point out, the politics in this game hit a little too close to home, which is funny and scary. They even say like, make America great again. Watch, we're not gonna get too into politics or anything on the show. We're gonna stay away from all of that. This game just happens to deal with politics. But it's very much like the over the top commercialized, like way too over the top politics in this game, which is really, it's interesting, and it's a really good concept for the game, and I honestly think it hits more than it doesn't. But I know there's going to be some people who don't want to hear any of this political stuff in a video game, so that might be a turnoff for some of you. I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, and it's not too bad. It's more of like a over the top if this guy was like a fucking evil ass cyborg. It's really nothing about Trump, guys. I'm going to tell you that right now.
It's not.
So I don't know if you know this, but the original person who did Make America Great Again was Ronald Reagan. So this character is actually a reflection in my book of Ronald Reagan, less about Trump.
And it probably is.
It probably is, because that's it.
Before
that was
Trump
the original
was
guy
going for president.
Exactly.
This was 2013, and they started working on this in 2007 or whatever.
Yeah.
So this is way before Trump even started doing any political stuff. So this is nothing to do with Trump.
Yeah, this is probably all Ronald Reagan's bullshit from the 80s, because this is kind of like reflective of the 80s time. Another thing,
very much 80s in it.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing I didn't really like about this game, you know, I really enjoy the adventuring sometimes where you can go around, but they have this weird thing. Basically, you have a little scanner, and you can scan the map to find items that are helpful to you, and the sub-items are actually super fucking helpful, but you find such a limited amount of those items.
Yeah.
Like, I really wish they would have put more of the sub, especially the EMP grenades. Those things were fucking on fire to kill certain things.
I never used those EMP grenades.
They're awesome. They stun the enemy for like 10 seconds. The smoke grenades, 10 seconds. Like, it is insane.
I didn't even know how to heal until I got to the monsoon fight, and then I was like, I need to know how to heal.
Wait, why do you need to know how to heal? If you die, it auto-heals you.
I didn't know that, and I was too afraid of having to start the boss fight over again.
Yeah, and I mean, you were playing on easy, I think you said, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
And normal, guys, that's another thing we're going to touch on, is the discrepancy between these fucking difficulties are insane.
Yeah, they're pretty monstrous.
So, like, on normal, this game was very hard. It was almost to the point, there was a point in the game where I'm just like, fuck this game, fuck this game, fuck this game, fuck this game. Like, it gets to that point of anger that you will have while playing it if you're not good at combos.
Yes, yeah. No, that's for sure. And I mean, parrying that's kind of and combos. Platinum games typically does have their harder difficulties are hard.
Yeah.
Especially trying to get those insane S ratings. It's ridiculous. But yeah, the easy difficulty, you don't even have to do directionals when you parry and stuff. It gets really easy. It makes the combat fly really quickly. So if you wanted to just raise through the game, just do it on easy.
Yeah. Yeah, or at least like do that to get used to what you need to do for a harder difficulty. Playing on normal is actually a pain in the ass. Halfway through, I tried to switch it to easy, and it doesn't let you switch it, so you have to start over. And I was like, I'm not starting this over. I'm just going to beat it as is.
Yeah.
The boss fights, too. One thing I didn't like about this is how long they take. It's not like the battle itself takes a long time. It's just that there's so much happening. I mean, there's cutscenes, there's random points where you need to win fights and random points where you need to lose fights. And you like, it just gets to be really long. So you just feel like you're stuck on something that should have taken 20 minutes and it's 2 hours later.
For sure.
So
the other thing I'll say is like the pacing does have a little bit of problems, especially because there is quite a bit of like just pure adrenaline action and then phone call, and then you walk 10 feet, and then another phone call, and then a cutscene, and then you do a little bit of action, and then another phone call, and every phone call you're just walking and you have a screen up in front of your face, and it almost feels like those like loading like screens like to load the next area kind of things.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it is that way to kind of hide loading in that game, which it totally could be, but it was just very weird.
Yeah, I mean, by that point loading different levels was easier, I want to say,
not
in 2013.
Bad,
you know, remember when what Tony Hawk game was that where they were, their whole brag was no more loading screens? God, that's from years ago. That wasn't Underground. No, I don't think so. It was another one. It might have been Wasteland.
American Wasteland,
something like that. Whichever one it was, it just, they bragged about not having loading screens, and that was in like 2005. So
yeah, that's fair. But yeah, that's pretty much all I have for best and worst. Do you have anything else?
No, I think that's about it. One thing that's kind of dumb in there that I don't understand, that I will never fucking understand, that, guys, I can't express this enough, I don't understand. In the game, there are cutscenes where you pick up things that are the size of buildings. And you throw them.
Yeah.
Okay, you're very strong.
Yeah.
And then you get these two swords that are very strong, but you have a very slow swing to them. And I'm like, are these as heavy as the things he's picking up to throw that are the size of buildings?
Because
if they're not, then they should never be this slow. He should be very quick.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just every... when he's using a sword, it just always feels like a gut sword, and it's very slow.
it's just weird. It's just one pair of swords that are supposedly like big hit swords, and they're cool to use on the smaller enemies, and I'm sad that you only get to use them for a short while before you fight the final boss. It's funny that they're so slow when he's literally picking up, like...
Is it that really big guy's...
he does it several...
Which swords are you talking about? It's
like a double sword that are fused together that Sundowner had.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
I never actually used that one.
Yeah, it's super slow to slice, so it's just really funny that that's so slow, but he can pick up like literally a thing the size of a building. And I mean like a skyscraper, guys. I don't just mean like a two-story building.
I mean, there's at one point where he's fighting a robot that's like Godzilla size, he blocks... He's standing there just blocking attacks from it.
At one point,
and
he picked it up.
The sword is the size of the building.
Yeah.
It's 100 feet tall.
At one point, he picked up the entire thing and threw it. And so...
Yep. Like, and used it as a blade.
And used it as a blade and actually swung it faster than the two big swords are. So...
Damn.
That I had a little bit of a problem with, but it's not like that big of a deal. It's just weird to have that moment where you feel like, didn't I just throw something that was 6 million tons? How the fuck am I taking so long to really like anchor this down?
So we said balancing in these things never always makes
sense. Yeah, it doesn't always make sense. I get it. It's a game mechanic, so it's not that big of a deal. It's just weird. Let's move on to our next little segment then.
All right, so we'll talk about the first few hours. How did you feel about the first few hours of the game?
Honestly, this game really does pass the first two-hour test. I would say, like, I was really into it for the first two hours. Then after that, when it gets hard, that's when it gets like, fuck this game. But the first 2 hours are great.
I agree. I think this game gets you intrigued enough. It gets you hyped enough for the combat. You get a little kind of good background story for it, and then it starts building really quickly, honestly. So I think like the pacing of the game right at the beginning really captures you, and I think it'll capture most.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so next we'll go into Steve Achieves, or Steve's Achievements, whatever
Steve
you want
Achieves.
To call it. Steve Achieves.
What do you achieve, Steve?
I went through and I found some of my favorite achievements, or some of the ones that are like the most hard to get. So one of the hardest ones that I think I will never ever attempt in my entire life is the Stormbringer achievement. This is for completing the story on the Revengeance difficulty with getting all S ratings on every mission.
That's fucking crazy.
And only 0.61% of people have actually accomplished this.
To be fair, this is one of those games that when you get good at it, you will know.
Yes.
It'll take time, yes. It'll take replaying, but once you get used to the combat style, you'll be good at it. That'll probably be easy to do, or at least less challenging than it is when you first pick it up.
Yeah.
No.
But this game does have a little bit of a curve, and you probably would have to replay it quite a bit to get up to that level.
For sure. But I don't think it's impossible. It sounds harder than it actually is. I think most people are just like, I wouldn't replay this game.
That's fair. Next one is A Walk in the Dark. Complete the Abandoned Railroad Streakants and the third level without using the AR mode. I thought that was kind of fun. Just like,
because
it is
funny.
Like really pitch black in that moment.
Yeah.
And just like, all right, yeah. Which you can try to avoid a detection from these like robots and stuff down there. But if you don't, then I guess if you were just like walking around aimlessly just in the dark, then you would just probably get all the attention and have to fight everything. So
that's what happened to me.
Not that bad, yeah. I mean, I did that anyways. I just always fight. I didn't really take any stealth options in the game.
The stealth options, I never tried it. I read somewhere that you can like be in the box and be behind something and insta-kill it.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. And I'm like, well, that's the point of the fucking box. I didn't know that that was the point of the box.
Speaking of, there's a achievement for A Lover, Not a Fighter, successfully completing 10 no-kill battles during the story mode.
Oh, nice. Yeah, there's several of them. There's several of them per level, honestly.
Yeah. There's also a bunch of secret achievements in the game for killing each boss on hard or higher difficulty without taking any damage, and each one of these only has about a 1% completion. That seems pretty ridiculous to
me, actually,
especially for some of these
bosses. So, some of the bosses, yes, when you first play them, when you have to redo those two bosses, I actually beat them without taking any damage, like both of them.
Oh, okay.
So
it wasn't too bad then?
No, as soon as you get used to what they do, you know how to block it, you know how to stop them.
True.
Like the quick counter option where you block parry something and then counter will break most of their focus, and then you'll just hit them a shit ton of times. Like, it is interesting that as soon as you memorize their patterns, they're a lot easier to beat.
Okay. I really just like the name of these two achievements. This one is Ich liebe Kapitalismus, which is acquire all the customization items in the game.
Yeah.
And then this one's called Peekaboo. It's for finding all the soldiers hiding in cardboard boxes in the game.
Yeah, see, I didn't know that was a thing until I was watching a video about the creating of the game, and then I saw that you could, like, slash a box and a soldier comes out.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's fucking cool. I didn't even try to do that.
So, playing other Metal Gear games, I knew cardboard boxes was the way to hide.
Yeah.
So, as soon as I saw a cardboard box, I attacked it, and I was like, ha, there's a guy in it. And I laughed so hard. I was like,
okay,
yay.
See, and I didn't think to attack him because you can pick him up.
Yep, you could also pick up
the
boxes.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, okay, this must just be one I can't pick up or something.
it's very unique, but it's an Easter egg to its own stuff.
Yeah, I like that one, actually. That one was, that's fun.
Yeah.
You can suck your own dick on that one. I'll give you that one.
Exactly. Speaking of which, let's get right into the hunt for all the eggs. That's the big Easter egg in this that I thought was just very hilarious. My favorite Easter egg in this is actually in chapter 2. A kid you save in the sewer says, "Cowabunga, a ninja in the sewer," and then starts singing, "Go ninja, go ninja, go."
Yeah. You know, that kid is, I think that's George. That's his name,
George.
Right? I think it's George.
I think so, yeah.
And It's so funny. As you're listening to him talk, I'm just like, did they just like take the idea from Jar Jar Binks or something? Because this kid sounds a lot like Jar Jar. At one point, he said, "Misa gonna like you." I'm just like, what the fuck did you just say?
Weird, yeah.
He's supposed to be Mexican, I think, and they do it like a Jamaican weird fusion accent.
Yeah, they do have some sort of like fusion accent that's a little like weird, and it's like kind of like a, I don't even necessarily say it's like Hispanic in nature. I don't know. It's definitely feels like more.
Well, he's
Jamaican
in Mexico, remember? Like for that part, true. He is in Mexico, and it's supposed to be Spanish people, but maybe in Metal Gear Solid Land. No, it's Mexico. They specifically said Mexico.
No, I know. I'm saying the accent though.
Oh, like maybe. I'm thinking that they have something in Metal Gear Solid that we don't know. Like Mexico was taken over by Jamaica or some shit. Like who
that's
knows?
Fair. But the Go Ninja obviously is referencing Vanilla Ice's Ninja Rap from TMNT, Secret of the Ooze.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great movie. I also really love that. What?
That's the worst. Well, no, that's not the worst one.
It's
out of the three.
The worst one.
No, because that's number two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the worst one's number three, and then the best one's number one.
Fuck off. I will die on this. I love three.
Did
I
you
know
when they go back
and hates three?
When they went back
but
in time?
I love three.
I mean,
and they go to feudal Japan. That was so cool.
It's cool, but it's like the worst one, I think, based on reviews.
It's definitely the fourth one's actually the worst one.
Is there a fourth one?
There's a fourth live action one with a girl turtle Venus, and it's like Dimension something.
I don't know.
And it was a straight to VHS movie.
Oh, that's why.
I have it.
That's why I've never heard of it.
But they also did a full live action series with her as well with the four turtles. And I have both seasons of that as well.
Okay. Well, that's stupid.
I pretty much have everything turtles related. I love Ninja Turtles.
But like the first one by far, like if you think about childhood and everything, that's the best one, right?
Yeah, it is by far the best.
But if you were to say like your personal,
the Michael Bay ones.
Yeah. We don't fucking care about those. If you say personal preference, you can have whatever fucking personal preference you want, honestly.
Yeah, personal preference.
You do whatever you want.
The third one, I love. The first one's my absolute favorite. Third one, I actually do have a soft spot for.
Yeah.
I know it's trash. I love it. I love little Raphael with his little, this little kid that he kind of adopts Yoshi.
Yeah.
And he saves Yoshi's life. And they teach blacksmiths in feudal Japan how to make pizza. It's so stupid. It's the dumbest thing. And the big bad villain only cares about his little Tweety bird.
Yep.
It's the dumbest shit. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it is a good movie. I'm just saying it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, your personal shit will always overtake whatever the critics say, because a lot of us don't agree with critic stuff on a bunch of shit.
Exactly. Another one, and I didn't actually see this, but it says every time you free a hostage, he will run away, and then you can sprint after him and strike to undress. And
yeah.
A member of Raiden's team will actually rebuke you for it.
So I remember this, there was a reviewer I was reading, and he was playing the early access beta, and he was reviewing that, and he was talking about, like, it was a really weird part of the gameplay when I go into blade mode to cut up with some bad guy who is robbing some girl, and they're all cardboard cutouts. Mm-hmm. And he cuts the bad guy, but then accidentally hits the girl and cuts her dress off.
Oh, jeez.
And felt very awkward while cutting her dress off.
I bet. I mean, when I read that, like, because I was just like looking through like what people said for Easter eggs and stuff, and I was like, wait, what? There's what in the game?
Yeah.
I never even had that happen to me. So I was like, you have to try to get that to happen.
I think I killed
a
hostage at one point.
Okay.
I don't know if that was possible, but I went up to save her and she ran into my sword.
Okay.
I promise that's what happened.
Maybe her dress just fell off and she disappeared.
Maybe, or maybe she literally just, like, it's that whole NPC thing where they just run in random directions, and she happened to run while I was slashing another bad guy, and I'm pretty sure I killed her. She just disappeared after that, so I'm like, oh, okay, she must have died, I guess. I don't understand, but whatever.
Besides that, I did not get too many other Easter eggs. I didn't really see many else. If there's other ones that you guys know about, definitely message us, let us know about it.
Reach out. Soul of a Gamer Podcast at gmail.com. reach out. Yes. Reach out.
But yeah, that's it for the hunt for the eggs.
Okay. I liked it.
Yeah,
I like the undressing egg. That's my favorite one.
I like the Ninja Turtles egg. That's my favorite
one. Of course you do. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Boys say, girls say.
Go ninja.
I bet if you line those two songs up, they'd sound like perfect together.
Someone do a horrible mashup. Let's do it.
Yeah, please.
All right, so let's get into our last segment here. What is it worth, Scott?
This one's hard because it is actually a lot of fun. Like, I did have a lot of fun playing it. It's just mind-numbing fun. So it's one of those funs where you have a lot of fun when you're facing the easy enemies, and then when you're facing the hard ones, you want to quit. You don't want to get better at it, at least in my case.
Okay.
So like, I was like really struggling to think between a 2 and a 3. But I think I'm going to give it a 3 just based on some of the concepts in this game is actually really cool. I just wish that they made the normal difficulty more normal and less like it's on extreme hard mode.
Yeah. I actually am just straight up just giving it a 3. I think this game is very unique, very solid gameplay, an intriguing story, and as long as you aren't going to get too offended by the political nature of this game, I think most people would enjoy this.
Yeah, I agree.
And especially if you're a fan of Platinum games, like, give this a shot. I mean, this is so unlike every other Metal Gear game that it's very unique. And even for Metal Gear fans, I feel like they would really appreciate just a whole new style and a whole new genre to the game.
For sure.
And I wish more game studios would do this with, like, spinoff games. Like, just show us a whole, like, we don't have to have the exact same game every time.
Yeah, for
sure.
Give
us a game in that universe in a whole new style.
I would, you know, and you think of, like, they did that with different games, like Halo. Halo did that with Halo Wars into an RTS. I mean, other games have done it and had a lot of success doing it, so I'm confused to why more games don't do that.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing that I wish. I think it's a big gamble, and I think that's where it lies, because a lot of fans want more of the same or just improvements of the same, so completely shifting styles can be kind of daunting. And I know, like, probably money wise and all these producers' eyes and stuff like that, it's probably just like, I don't know if it's worth the gamble. This can either completely do good or just completely fail, and so that's probably why it's not done as much, but I do wish it was done more.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, that was Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Yes.
By the way, guys, just so you know, I looked up Revengeance in the dictionary to see if it was a word. Okay, and I really wanted to know, is it a word? And it is not a word, but somebody added it to the dictionary as a word and then cited the fact that it comes from the game, which I thought was really fucking funny.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I was like, okay, where did you get this? Oh, it comes from Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. No wonder it's a fucking word. Like, I can't remember the definition, but it was like seeking extreme violence while getting revenge or something. It was really funny.
Revenge with extreme prejudice.
Yeah, like, it is so funny.
So is John Wick a revengeance movie then?
Yes, it's a revengeance movie.
Perfect. All right.
Now you guys know John Wick just stole it from Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
There we go.
The attitude, at least.
But yeah, and then next week, do you want to announce what you picked for our story there?
Yeah, we are doing Pokemon Colosseum next week. This is a different take on a Pokemon game, not quite the same that you're used to with the color games or the, I guess they're not really color games anymore, the concept games.
Yeah.
Because Sun and Moon items.
The main title games, I would
say. Yeah, we'll say main title games. This is a outside main title game. It's probably one of the coolest Pokemon games I've honestly ever played, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I had never played it before at all, and this is very, very unique.
For sure. It's very different, guys, so just be ready for that. Yes. And if you want to play along with us, go for it. Start the game up and then listen to how the game was made next week. Also, if you want to reach out, you know, soulofagamerpodcast@gmail.com. We cannot make that more clear. We'd love to hear from you guys. We want to hear game suggestions. We want to hear how you're doing. You want to hear what you think of the podcast, improvements, things you like, things you hate, anything. Just send us a message.
You want to be a guest? I don't care. Just start if you want to,
there's
with
no,
us.
Please do not get promised guesthood to anyone who reaches out.
Well, I'm not just going to accept any of those offers. They have to be a decent offer.
I see. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening again. We will catch you next week.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.